by doing this, and you know, this is, you don't have to be a Christian to believe this, you know, by doing this, Christ conquered the Roman civilization, the Roman Empire, became Absolutely. Himself the most powerful person of all human history, that, you know, has been more influential by a massive measure, by more than anybody else. Alex, good to have you on board for Podcasts, or Food for the Journey again. We're going to talk about our next principle that we're busy reviewing on Manifesto Core, which is, at least the working title we're using, is Men Are Dangerous. And that's proved to be pretty difficult, even for us, to really get our minds around, right? So I'm looking forward to this conversation, and hopefully we can sort things out a little bit.
Looking forward to it as well, Paul. Really interesting topic.
Yeah. So how about, I'll start off by reading up what we have now. And we actually have the last sentence, we kind of have it in two versions, because we're standing a little bit at a little bit of a crossroads, which might be the same crossroads that our society is standing at regarding men and how dangerous they are and how to deal with that, I guess.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what that's going to be. So what we've written is that at times when we have grown used to comfort and complacency, but conflict and chaos are luring on our borders, men need to proactively find creative and meaningful ways of regularly confronting their fears and danger in order to mold themselves into being the type of man who can, and this is where we have then two options, who can, one, courageously stand firm in the face of that which is harmful and evil. And the second option is to say, to mold themselves into being the type of man who can direct his own violence towards that which is harmful and evil. So these are really, the way I see it is that this kind of like represents two different understandings of, and maybe I've read someone that like our culture has moved from a culture of repentance, which is kind of like looking at myself and seeing my own fails, my own failings, my own shortcomings, and working on myself. And this is where the directing violence towards that which is evil is actually saying, well, what I am is good. What I am is good. I'm created in the image of God in the Christian understanding. But there are elements of myself where I'm misguided. I might be traumatized. I might be lacking in insight. I might be ignorant. And so I do things that actually, you know, sometimes I'm jealous. Sometimes I'm, you know, I act maliciously, even, you know, unconsciously. I have shadows and all this kinds of stuff. And so when I direct my violence towards that evil, that misguidedness, then I'm able to grow. And it's often, you know, entails a death to self. It's painful. It's a difficult process. I go through the dark night of the soul somehow. But I grow as a human being in that way. The other one of standing firm, it's more in reference to the existence of, you know, bad ideas out there. And sometimes my tendency to submit to them. And so it's about, even when, you know, my wife is caught up and really attached to, you know, the type of design that we should use, but it's like some really fancy thing, and I know it's a bad idea and it's going to not work and it's going to cause a whole lot of hassle, but I want to avoid the conflict, then I'll just like go along and say, like, you know, I'm using this as an example. Then instead of being courageously standing firm, I submit in my conflict avoidance, or whatever it is, right? Or, and of course, this is more important when it comes to like a child, you know, child parenting issues or something like that as well. But again, it's, and this is where we're wondering, like, where is Manifesto going to be working? Where is Core going to be working? Because it's also focusing on the problems and the misunderstandings that are outside of myself. All the issues and problems are out there. I am the one who stands firm and resists them, which is maybe where a lot of people are. And it's often a first step as well. But, you know, and maybe it's the work of religions to help people to do the inner work as well. I don't know. I'm not sure. That's where we are right now. So what do you think about all of that, Alex?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. And I think what is really key for me, from my point of view, is a really good, solid, honest look at oneself and to really admit, you know, who I am and where I am in terms of my fallen nature and the contentions I have with that. And do I just act them out, or do I have the courage to put them under the knee? So, you know, in the scriptures speaks about, you know, putting the old man to death. And do I have the courage then to stand on my convictions? So to go really from a focused internal view of a selfish acting out to really a more solid spiritual view of saying, I'm going to take a stand, and that takes courage, and it's not going to be popular. I'm going to have that turmoil within myself and that turmoil in society. And that takes courage. But there is also a point where I need to recognize that I have a capacity to break the rules. I have a capacity to do something that's bad or wrong. And in following that and doing that, breaking the rules, doing what's wrong in and of itself might be bad and detrimental, but there is an amoral, if I can use that term, an amoral aspect to the capacity, which I can then utilize. Like recognizing that I have the capacity, I can now harness that to do just what you said, to stand firm against that which is harmful. Yeah. That's sort of the sort of place I am in sort of thinking about these things.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of our inspiration for this point comes from Jordan Peterson, who has popularized this idea of, you know, like rather a dangerous man than a harmless man, because the harmless man is actually far more dangerous as well. And I think that a lot of kind of, you know, both men's work, and if you especially look at the kind of more new agey versions of it, they have actually operated from the opposite of this principle, which has truth to it as well. You know, when we say like men are dangerous, then, you know, you could also say, well, men are good, and there is truth to men are good, because of course they are also that, or men create safety, or, you know, whatever what it is, you know, because all of those things can be true. Men protect, but I don't know, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And the fact is that, you know, we are living in a dangerous world. We are dealing with all sorts of issues and problems, not only violence and crime and things like that, but sometimes more existential problems. And that takes being a lion rather than a lamb. I once heard someone talking about the fact that you don't want to be a sheep sitting at a table of wolves deciding on what's for lunch. And, you know, you want to be the wolf in that situation. And there's many situations in life that we face where you need to be dangerous in order to not only survive, but to prosper. And that's not to put other people down. That's not to trample other people or to prey on other people. But it really is to assert your own strength at a crisis point.
So one of the texts that we've been reading and preparing for talking about this topic, other than Jordan Peterson, and you've also been reading, I know, the Browning, who wrote this book about ordinary men, but we've also been looking at Solzhenitsyn's address to Harvard, the commencement address, I think it was in 1978. And he really, it's fascinating reading him coming from the Soviet Union at that time, having read about the gulags, or written about the gulags, and seeing like, okay, well, you know, wow, he escaped from that, really from the mouth of the lion in many ways. But in this address, he's also saying, well, I actually don't believe that Western society has all the answers that of what I'm looking for either. This isn't my savior. And the core thing that he identifies there, I think, is really prophetic, actually, as far as our current situation today and looking at it, you know, some 40, 50 years later, where he speaks about courage, the lack of courage, how this focus on the material well-being, the enjoyment of consumption and material pleasures has led to a massive gaping hole in the soul of Western society in many ways, and how that's just become so much more clear even today as well. As we're talking here, I'm really, if we had those two formulations that I started off with, I'm really leaning towards the one about, like, you know, this is about, you know, standing firm with courage is important, but the more fundamental action is actually recognizing my inherent ability to be violent and to act with violence. It's not, this isn't about being reactive, because obviously, you know, it, harnessing and channeling anger is the opposite of being reactive, but it's also the opposite of suppressing anger as well, because that so it's about learning to be able to control and become the master of anger, which I think actually goes a little bit back to our previous conversation we had about mastering sexuality. For me, this is, you know, and I think anybody who's had like a stormy relationship with a woman will realize how passionate lust and connection and intimacy in that way is also often connected with anger, and there's a kind of joining of these things that can happen when it's done. When it's done in God is the only thing I can say, actually, as well, because there's also possible to have relationships with women that just go through this constant cycle of drama of anger and makeup sex and anger and makeup sex, right, as well, which is not constructive, obviously. But there's something about that one can join together and overcome these resistances by facing them with courage, and especially, again, not seeing all the problems outside of ourselves, but realizing all the thing that I can change and the place where I can fix the universe is here in my own heart, in my own life, and especially then in, you know, it starts with my thinking, and then it goes into my actions as well.
Yeah, and I think Solzhenitsyn makes a really good point when he speaks about, and you sort of touched on that, the fact that in our modern society, we have everything that we need. We have an abundance, in fact, of all the good things that make for a good life. And we're able to pursue this idea of being happy and making ourselves happy and life being everything we want it to be. And that's not realistic. We sort of live in a bubble. And in a place like that, we lose the capacity to deal with tough things. And he sort of talks about the fact that although, you know, in the East, they've sort of lost, they don't have that. But what has happened through struggle and hardship and the persecution that he faced, what it does is it creates a capacity to be strong, to be courageous. And actually, he links it to a spiritual dimension. He says that's what's happened in the West. And while there's this loss of courage, is an almost spiritual bankruptcy because of this materialistic focus. Whereas in the East, there's this depth of spiritual understanding and growth due to struggle and hardship. And, you know, the scripture teaches the same thing. The thing is that we don't want to have to face these things. And so we rather stick our head in the ground and not be courageous, not make the hard decisions, and hope that things work out.
Yeah. And I think a really core thing that Solzhenitsyn formulates very well, and that I'm struggling still to really get through in our conversations in Manifesto, it's this distinction between good and evil. Sorry for interrupting. I hope you're enjoying the conversation. If you'd like to take these ideas and actually work to put them into practice instead of it just being a whole lot of hot air and talk, then I really recommend checking out Manifesto Core. Core is the place where we are working to set goals and then to hold each other accountable and thereby build integrity with each other as a group of guys working together. So there's a link in the description. Take a look. Otherwise, back to the conversation now. Okay, so we just lost each other for a second, but we'll continue. So I think that one of the big challenges that we're facing is, and Solzhenitsyn explains this very, very well, it's the distinction between good and evil and the existence, where in the West, we have this tendency to say, oh no, good and evil doesn't exist. Mm. And it's because I think we've also mistakenly placed good and evil at the level of the human being and said, oh, that person is evil, or Putin is evil, Joe Biden is good. So we have this black and white way of thinking about people, where actually good and evil, was it also Solzhenitsyn who says, you know, the dividing line between good and evil goes through the human heart. Yeah. And so every single human being has this good and evil inside of them. And so I find it really difficult to try and put across, like, what do we mean by evil? It's so difficult to explain it. And part of it is because it touched on something personal. Because, you know, if the dividing line between good and evil goes through my heart, then it means that part of what I think I am also contains things that, you know, could be evil, if we're taking that sentence, you know, to its conclusion. So it means that when someone says, oh, that's evil, then I'm like, well, that's what I am. Are you saying I'm evil? Well, then you're evil, you know, kind of thing, right? So and then it just goes into this emotional shouting match, which doesn't lead anywhere. So I think what's needed is to step back and to, first of all, recognize the goodness in each other, of course. But then with this principle of saying men are violent, then we're also creating a space where we can say, well, there are parts of us that are destructive. And they're also probably not always 100%, you know, used in the correct way all of the time. So Solzhenitsyn, in his talk, he talks a lot about how we focus on legality and judicial legality, about like right and wrong through what's given in the law. And if the state says things are okay, then it's okay. And so then within what the state defines as legal, then we kind of press freedom out to the maximum as much as we possibly can. And especially, you know, in specific areas, then this has led to even a complete acceptance of things which would have been, you know, morally reprehensible in times past, where, you know, he uses I think one of the examples is abortion and pornography and things like that as well, where, you know, like before, like killing a human being inside the womb was seen as murder. And today it's kind of, you know, and even for myself, most of my life, I saw killing a unborn baby as equivalent of like pulling out a tooth or something like that. I never really realized anything greater than that. And so what he says is that such a tilt of freedom in the direction of evil has come about gradually, but it was evidently born primarily out of humanistic and benevolent concept, according to which there is no evil inherent to human nature. The world belongs to mankind, and all the defects of life are caused by wrong social systems which must be corrected. Strangely enough, though, the best social conditions which have been achieved in the West, there is still criminality, and there is even considerably more of it than in the pauper and lawless Soviet society. Yeah. So I think we still have work to do to talk about this thing with evil. I don't think we've landed it yet.
No.
But I'm hoping that we can get a layer deeper in it.
Yeah, and it's really interesting that Jordan Peterson, when he talks about this, he talks about the harmless man being very evil. And that's an interesting take, because when you then talk about how are you then dangerous, he then goes to being able to articulate what you think. And for me, that sort of brings together this idea that being dangerous is about articulating your values and having the courage to do that against public opinion and to stand firm on that. As opposed to being someone who's harmless, always giving ground and allowing your values to be eroded until perhaps even you are persuaded otherwise. You give up your values and take on the values of society that have proved so detrimental. And so it's a lot about having your values, taking responsibility for what you believe, and standing firm on the ground that you have. And that sometimes takes a capacity to be able to be dangerous or to not give ground. And so for me, people like Martin Luther King come to mind, a man who's through sort of passive resistance was able to articulate. And I mean, he's really well known for his speeches and how well he articulates the idea that he's positing against, say, someone like Malcolm X, who was also an incredibly articulate and charismatic personality, but what he was positing was more not a control of the fact that man is dangerous, but a releasing of that violence. Whereas Martin Luther King said, through the control of that, we can establish our ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. So this goes back to that initial distinction we had about like courageously standing firm against, you know, bad ideas that are out there, or directing violence towards something. And I think, you know, like certainly Malcolm X, he directed violence towards what he saw was evil. But the problem is that he saw himself as the sole representative of the good and the evil was all out there. So it was completely legitimate for him to direct violence towards those things. And it's a nuance that I'm not sure which way we're going to land on, actually. And maybe it's dependent on that conversation about good and evil and where that goes. Because, yeah, it's like yes, how did Martin Luther King know where to stand? You know, people just kind of assume like, oh, there is this one direction of where all society is going. It's something like liberal consumerism, democracy, capitalism, and that's the final answer. And I think we're really, you know, as a global society, seeing more and more clearly like how that's just not the case. You know, it's like there's a lot of people out there who just don't want liberal consumer democracy. You know, South Africa is a case in point where you saw how, you know, there it was a very well-established, very, you know, productive, classical liberal democracy with strong institutions, strong media, courts, and rule of law, and all these kinds of things. And then, you know, it was kind of placed down there in Africa, and now it's been given over to people who have a different culture. And increasingly, by their actions, they are very clearly rejecting. And, you know, they have a show of democracy, but it's not, you can't just, you know, you, it's not just because you have an election doesn't mean it's a democracy, like a functional democracy. Yeah. It goes all the way into the hearts and minds of every single person living there. And if you're just having elections, you know, every 4 years, that doesn't mean it's working as a democracy, right? There's a tribal system of government that's functioning in South Africa in reality underneath that kind of, you know, superficial democratic institutional idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think Solzhenitsyn also makes that point when he talks about the West and Russia. He says, you know, he rejects Marxism and communism, but he doesn't see Western democracy and capitalism as the answer. Because of those differences. And I think doing that with Africa and South America and Asia, China in particular, big mistake.
Yeah, I mean, I've just been speaking to some Ukrainians as well recently. And yeah, we're not going to dive too deeply into this one. But, you know, like what these Ukrainians say is like this idea that like, oh, we're defending democracy in Ukraine. It's like, Ukraine's not a democracy. Like, are you you know, everybody knew this just 2 years ago, but all of a sudden now, everybody believes that like, oh yeah, we're fighting for liberty and democracy. It's like, no, of course, like they've been holding elections, but it hasn't been a functioning democracy. You can't just import, you know, Western democratic ideals into other countries. And because they're now holding elections, then that makes them a liberal Western democracy. Like that's not what's happening. You know, Ukraine is led by strong men and there's a battle between these strong men on both sides. And, you know, they use the ideologies of the West and the East as kind of a cover for, you know, actually at the end of the day, like their own self-interests.
Absolutely.
The way that politics has always functioned in many parts of the world, of course.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good. Yeah. Okay. Well, Alex, thanks. Any final thoughts or quotes before we close off that one there?
I suppose the last thought is sort of a man being strong and not sort of doing that in violence is the picture of Christ as he goes to the cross. You know, that was seen as a sign of weakness, being defeated by death. But in fact, by dying, he won. So there's a real good example of being dangerous.
Yeah, good to not finish it off on politics. I think that's really relevant. And absolutely, it's like, you know, there's a bit of a mystery there, I think, which we kind of take it for granted. But when we look at it seriously, then it's actually totally mind-blowing. And one way of seeing, you know, the whole Christian story, the entire Bible, the entire story of the cosmos is this idea that ultimate power, ultimate authority, ultimate, you know, government and patriarchy is actually based on the idea of love. And Christ demonstrated that by being God himself, coming onto earth, doing just loving people, healing people, you know, helping people, and for that receiving hate and betrayal and envy and, you know, all these kinds of things. And instead of fighting against it, his way of actually standing firm is he stood firm in truth, but at a material level, he completely submitted himself even to complete destruction of his body, you know, to torture, whipping, humiliation. His best friends abandoned him and denied him. And then he was crucified, you know, the most horrific way of being and most shameful way of dying next to two common criminals, you know, after they had also released a murderer instead of him as well, right? And by doing this, and you know, this is, you don't have to be a Christian to believe this, you know, by doing this, Christ conquered the Roman civilization, the Roman Empire, became himself the most powerful person of all human history, that, you know, has been more influential by a massive measure, by more than anybody else. And so it was a very concrete demonstration of how love is far more powerful. and again, it was this attitude of a material kind of, you know, standing firm on truth, but yeah, material, you know, not engaging in violence, replying to violence with violence himself as well. So it's a deep thing that I think, like, living this out is crazily difficult, or even beyond the capacity for all of us. And, you know, when politicians use it as an excuse for, you know, kind of different policies, I think it's also used badly. But I think it's something to ponder for all of us. Trying to understand
absolutely.
More.
Hate is easy. Courage, love takes courage.
Yeah. The most, even and especially the closer someone is to you, the more difficult it is to love them, right? Abstract to love to people down in Africa is very, very simple. Or, you know, people far away or in political situations. Oh, yeah, we need to be loving and kind to refugees and stuff like that. Everybody can say that and give some money to it or something like that. But actually demonstrating love in your day-to-day relationships with the people that are around you, that's where the cookie crumbles a lot of
absolutely.
The time. Or where the rubber hits the road. Okay. Thanks, Alex. Good. Very enjoyable. Cool. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Great.